agus tá fáilte roimh ag glórachairde. Welcome along to Skull Sour Willie Clancy. We're here at the 31st annual Willie Clancy Summer School in Milltown Malbay in West Clare. And on the programme tonight, the sounds of the summer school. We'll hear from the piping recital and from the reed making clinic. We'll have a song from Scotland and a lovely pipes and fiddle duet from Dublin. We'll also talk to the authors of a new book about the summer school, and we'll be talking to the musicians involved in a new CD of the music of Patrick Weston Joyce. Bonnie Lynn. Selection of tunes there, music recorded in the Bellbridge Hotel in Spanish Point on Wednesday night, featuring Áineann Connell, Francis O'Connor, Jesse Smith, Yvonne Kane, Liam O'Connor and Aoife O'Connor together, musicians from various different parts of Ireland. Well, we're here on the main street in Milltown Malbay now, and for the first time this year, a comprehensive account of Skull Sour Willie Clancy since its foundation in 1973 has been published. It's a record of the summer school in words and pictures. The pictures by Tony Kearns and the words by Barry Taylor, and I'm joined by Tony and Barry. Tony, you've been coming along to the Willie Clancy Week for years now, and I suppose your pictures to most visitors to the Willie Clancy Summer School, your pictures are fairly well known at this stage, but is this the first time they've been put together in a book?
It's the first first book publication. I've had two calendars produced in the mid-90s, which people became more aware of what I was doing, but this is certainly the first publication, and it's the culmination really of both our efforts in the work we've been doing on our own efforts about the school, and so we're delighted it's there.
Where was your own origin? What attracted you first of all to the Willie Clancy Summer School? And I mean, you've become synonymous with it nearly at this stage.
I'll have to start learning to play an instrument as well, I suppose. I came in the 1990 when we were visiting the area, and I saw posters, and I was aware of the Willie Clancy Summer School because of my interest in traditional music, but I had never really had any thoughts about going there, but we were here on holiday, and I saw the posters and I said to myself, great, but then I realised we were a week early and we were leaving, so we just made a vow to come back the following year, and we've been coming back every year since.
Okay, I'm going to go to Barry Taylor now, and Barry, ask you, your connection with the school goes back a little bit further than that, and you've written what is basically the history of the summer school here.
Yep, I came here first in 1975. I was living in London, and I used to meet people like Bobby Casey and Tommy McCarthy and all the great musicians who were playing in London at that period. And I think initially the reason why I came here because I wanted to play the fiddle, essentially. And I'd heard it was a great place that I might pick up something on the fiddle. And that's why I came. Enrolled in a class with the late John Kelly, where there were about a dozen of us, one fiddle class. And now, 31 years later, 400 or 500 fiddles and 40 classes. It's a huge change.
You've watched it develop and grow over the years, obviously, from what you say there. In terms of positive developments and negative developments, how would you look at its growth over the years?
That's an interesting question. I think positively, you have to say, I mean, the number of people playing music now is huge increase from those days, and particularly young people. Fantastic improvement in standards, I would say. And the technical ability of the young musicians nowadays, really, it's outstanding. The thing I do remember very fondly was that after the classes finished, back in the kind of early days, we used to wander down to the pub with our teachers, and you know, you could always get in the pub, and if you were really brave, you might even get to play a tune with them, and that was really an encouraging thing. Now that's kind of changed, really. I mean, there just isn't the space for everyone to play in the town, and that must be a, you know, slight negative thing, I think, particularly for the younger people. Don't get the chance to play with the people who they're learning from.
Tony, let me go back to you again and just ask you about the pictures, because I suppose it's fair to say that they're, in the main, there are a couple of posed portraits, if you like, but in the main they're informal pictures of formal and informal happenings at the school.
That's right, yeah. I tried, I mean, my effort was to comprehensively cover every aspect of the activities of summer school. I mean, I started out, the idea was in 92, was to do a photo documentary and do it comprehensively. So there'd be the classes, there'd be the workshops like the Scope of Irish Music, and there'd be the recitals in the and the lectures in the afternoon and recitals in the evening. And so as well as obviously capturing musicians who were involved in the school playing in sessions in various places. The idea was to have a full and a comprehensive picture or a record of the school. And basically I found that there's so much going on here, and as I was saying, so you know, such a huge event now that it took a number of years to really feel, you know, that I felt I had covered everything.
Okay, it's a beautiful publication. Congratulations to you both. It's called A Touchstone for the Tradition, The Willie Clancy Summer School in Words and Pictures by Tony Cairns, Barry Taylor, published by Brandon. A great version of the Flog and Reel there from the late Willie Clancy. We'll stay with the music of the Illan Pipes, and the Illan Pipes recital took place in the community hall here on Wednesday night. Ronan Brown from Dublin was one of the featured pipers, and here's how he introduced his final selection of tunes.
The pipes are flying at the moment. I arrived down here on Monday at lunchtime and my baritone regulator didn't exist at all, and I was meant to be giving a regulator class with only half a deck of cards. But one of the most unsung heroes of Irish piping is a man called Dave Hegarty, who works away quietly and a lot of the time thanklessly making reeds for people, as well as teaching people how to make reeds. And he's up there in the community hall, or whatever you call it, the school, the old school, where the library is, every day this week. And I'd say by the end of the week, he'll have about 30 or 40 pipers playing pipes again who probably wouldn't be if he hadn't been there making reeds for them. So I want to pay him a huge, huge debt of gratitude. I've known him since I was in short pants, which is only a few weeks ago, but himself and Dan Dowd. He used to learn from Dan. I was learning from Dan. We were all there. I was 8 years old, I think, when I met him. And Dan O'Dowd showing us all. But fair play to Dave. He learned everything Dan had to teach him and took us a lot further again. And he's one of the best readmakers around. Fair play to you, Dave. So, two reels, the Flax in Bloom and the Dairy Maid. Thank you.
That's the Flax and Bloom and the Dairy Maid there from Ronan Brown. And you may have heard Ronan talking there in his introduction about one of the unsung heroes of Illan Piping, and that's Dave Hegarty. We've spoken to Dave on the programme before. Dave, nice to talk to you again.
Yeah, thanks, Anya. It's nice to be back here again and to see your own.
What about the unsung hero?
Well, I'd say maybe he might be overstating the case a bit there, but we do try to help, because all of the pipers who come to our workshop here, they all deserve attention, and they all get, we try to help them to, you know, do these little adjustments and tuning problems, which, you know, as pipers advance in knowledge, they need to get instruction on this so that they can get their instruments and keep them going well.
I suppose we've talked in previous years about the whole making of reeds and that, but you were telling me that up here you do a lot of some adjustments as well, and very minor but very important little jobs on people's pipes.
Indeed. No, Michael Feehan is here, and we've spent a little bit of time there just getting his drones going. You know, he had little problems there, drones waving under pressure, so we replaced two of the drone reeds, and we're testing him out, and we're going to maybe send him away happily enough in a few minutes, but we're nearly ready to roll. So just see how we'll just do a recheck again. Yeah, it seems to be performing better down there. Again, even when we get these adjusted, they take a while to settle in, you know, because they can vary a bit, especially under the warm conditions in here, you know, and they take a while to...
Yeah, no, I was just watching what you were doing there, and it seemed to me to be very, very, very minor adjustments, and it was just something that you just kept working at it until you got it to work.
Well, there's a certain amount of diagnosis and sort of fault finding involved, and sometimes little tiny adjustments can make all the difference in the world. Now, this sort of information, it's difficult to transmit other than by actually one-to-one explaining what you're doing and passing it on to others. And, you know, when we reflect back over the years, that was the way Willie Clancy and Sean Reid, Martin Healthy, Dan Dowd, and all the other great characters passed it on to us. So we're really passing it on in the same way. And I would mention this year that Michael Joe Sexton passed on, who was one of Willie's great friends, and he was a great supplier of reeds and reed cane, and he made quite a few reeds for us over the years, and he used to always call up, and so he's gone to his eternal reward. He's gone to the great Piper's weekend in the sky.
I just was interested when I was looking at what you were doing with Michael's pipes, and that somebody who's living, say, in another part of Ireland or another part of the world, and it's not the Willie Clancy Summer School, and something minor like that, it must be extremely frustrating when they don't know how to adjust it.
Well, we've got over that to some degree in various ways. Now, firstly, there's the reed maker's manual, which I've put together for the club, and it gives fairly comprehensive information as to how to solve these problems. Now, another project we have for the longer term is to do a comprehensive reed making and pipe adjustment video, because, again, the promotion and the dissemination of information to people who are far away, it's a very important job, so that they can, you know, learn how to do these adjustments, and how, if they haven't workshop conditions nearby, at least they have some means whereby they can, you know, see the thing done and follow along the lines of the instructions that they've got.
Are younger pipers learning how to do this?
They are indeed. In fact, one of the most happening things about all of these activities is the number of excellent reed makers that there are now. Younger people like Martin Preshaw, who's helping me there this year, who's a top-class reed maker, and he has a very high success rate with the reeds he's making. And consistently, the standard is going up, and no doubt you've even seen in the piping concert there last night, the high standard of tuning that all of the players attained. So this is, you know, I'm sure Willie Clancy and the others of the past would be more than delighted to see such an improvement in pipe tuning standards.
Dave, thanks for talking to us as always, and also thanks to Mick for playing the pipe for us.
Yeah, thanks very much, Anya. What's your
name?
Thank you. Well, we move now from reed making to singing and Scottish singing, and Mairead Stewart is here with me. Mairead, you've been coming to the Willie Clancy Summer School as a demonstrator of Scottish song for the last number of years, but this year you have another new role. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, Mairead asked me to teach Scottish Gaelic, and I thought that nobody would come to my class, but it's been full and it's been great, and it's helped me to understand Irish as well as my pupils in understanding Scottish Gaelic. It's so close. It's just really the pronunciation. They find it difficult to change the pronunciation.
I suppose the singing, in a way, helps that sort of marriage between the two languages and the two countries, because a lot of the songs would be related to each other as well, wouldn't they?
Yeah, they are. In fact, I give the class a song at the end of each day, and I think that will sort of help them to remember part of the language more than just the conversational part. But there are quite a few songs in Scottish Gaelic that are related to Irish songs as well, and we have a lot of Ossianic ballads too, of course.
Over the last number of years now, as I said, you've been coming here, and I think the organisers of the summer school are quite anxious to develop that link between Ireland and Scotland.
Yes, they are. I mean, we'd like to do the same over in Scotland, but we're not really getting there to the same extent. But Mairead has determined that there should be a singer at least, or one singer at least here from Scotland every year, but there's two of us this year. We're going to have three, but something happened to her along the way.
So you've been coming. It's a week of the year now that I think you don't like to miss.
No, I wouldn't wish for the world. Sometimes I do miss it if I'm teaching in Scotland at a summer school, which I have to put first, of course. But I will always try and come here for the rest of my life, as long as I can walk and talk and sing. It's great.
Now, talking about singing, I think you're going to sing a song for us.
Yeah, I'll try and sing a song that's got a bit of a relationship to a song in Ireland, Don Loch. The last verse is the same as the one of the verses in Don Loch. I'll try it anyway.
Lovely.
Oh, do could I do head my oh, could I do head my do head a run a chin flow fan yerio good karst ma hu gregor ya kuma Can I see that art and need? I'm since moved on and my Yeah.
Lovely singing there from Mairead Stewart from Scotland. Well, Kitty Lie Over is the title of one of the CDs which was launched last Sunday here at Skull Sour, Willie Clancy, featuring Mick O'Brien on pipes and Kevin O'Reilly on fiddle. And Mick and Kevin are here with us now. Mick, when did yourself and Cuivin start playing together?
It was about 2 years ago. We went down to the Johnny Doran weekend in Glendalough, and I was to play at the concert, so we sat down and played a few tunes together, and we ended up playing on stage. And just kind of gelled. We just enjoyed the music together, so that's when we started off.
And when did the CD begin to happen, begin to be planned then?
Begin to take life.
The next day, really.
He said we decided we were so good that we there was time to do a CD on the spot. But we looked into a friend of ours, Seamus Brett, keyboard player. He's a studio up in Stamullen. Actually, it was last January, 12 months. And we went that. Asked James, would it be all right if we go in and just throw down a few tracks? And we did an afternoon, and we threw down about 16 tracks, and we come home and we listened to it, and I gave Kevin a buzz. I was delighted from jumping out of the seat at home, and we said, that's it, it'll work. And we thought then, of course, that we'd go to the studio and we'd have it done in no time. And how wrong we were, because it took a little bit longer than that. So when they really go in and decided that, okay, let's have, we're going to make this and do it right, you know. And it took a little bit longer than we expected, but sure, how an hour. It's there now.
Cuivin, you're a fiddle player. I mean, you play fiddle on the CD, but you have quite a close connection with Illan piping as well.
I have. I kind of have started trying to make them. And I have the first set nearly finished and it's making noise. And it's not that unpleasant anyway. But I like pipes and playing with pipers and things. And kind of when I'm playing the fiddle, I'm trying to sound like a set of pipes with the drones and things like that.
And does that make it easier than, say, playing in a duet with a piper?
I don't know, you'd have to ask Mick.
It's terrible in mind, yeah. To play with a fiddle player that wants to be a piper. It's, you know, it's really dreadful, you know. But
I love the sound of the pipes, and it's beautiful. And I think the two instruments are probably the finest combination, pipes and fiddle, flat pipes and the sound of the fiddle.
You know, when he tunes down, we're actually playing in B or B flat on the CD, when you tune down, and the resonance of the strings, the low strings, like, I know they're probably a little bit like rubber bands, but the resonance, the droning effect, I think is beautiful. It was kind of inspiring.
Okay, just a brief word about the repertoire on the CD from many different sources.
Well, yeah, I guess a lot of it, I was working in the archives in Marion Square, and I got to hear some really lovely stuff and tunes, you know, tunes, versions of tunes and tunes that haven't seen the light of day for quite a while, and kind of playing them, and there's a good few of them, things like Temple on Glownton and Hickey's Reel, things like that from Dennis Murphy, a lot from Dennis Murphy, of stuff from Patrick Kelly as well, and it hasn't been heard in a while, I don't think. And then just nice versions of things, you know, notes different here and there to just make all the difference. So that'd be where a fair bit of it would come from.
Are you going to play a couple of tunes for us now, Mick? What are you going to play?
I think we'll try the Woman in the House and Rolling the Ryegrass afterwards. Thank you.
That's lovely music there from Nick O'Brien and Cuilín O'Reilly. Two Reels, The Woman of the House and Rolling in the Ryegrass. And Kitty Lie Over is the title of that new CD from Nick and Cuilín. Stuart Horse, Skull Sarah, Willie Clancy, Murdershow Rokine joins us now. Murdershow, you as pleased as ever with the week?
Well, pleasantly surprised, really, with the week. Like, it was the usual thing beforehand that people said it might not be called it wrong, but we're concerned to say about the school itself. And apart, we'd say, from the dancing section of it, all the other areas would be on par. In fact, in a couple of cases, we had to get extra tutors on Monday morning.
I noticed that the number of concertina players seems to have increased quite considerably, which I think is a very, very nice thing to be happening.
It's probably unusual in the sense that with some Monday morning, now that was one of the areas we had to get two extra tutors, and there's probably in excess of 100 concertina players. We have, I think, 10 different locations for them, but I thought it wasn't surprising, that's County Clare, but there's so many classes going on in the winter in various areas that's as a result of it, because as well as a lot of concertina players now seem to come from Cork, Clare to be the dominant, obviously, Cork and Waterford. A lot of they would be the main, just looking at the enrolment. And again, it's a funny thing, just Clare people who are probably teaching the concertina, but they believe in Cork as well.
Are there as many people coming from abroad as usual and from the same range and variety of countries?
The range would be probably wider, but there are definitely not as many coming from the States. Like, we again have many extra countries, like, not just, you know, there's people from Taiwan, Singapore, and things like that, but the numbers from the States, I'd say, overall would be down. But otherwise, like, certainly we'd have a world widespread, you know, with taking that into account.
And I suppose it's fair to say that the decrease in the number of people from the States is a general reflection of what's happening in tourism as opposed to anything to do with the summer school.
Oh, I would think so, yeah, because even last year, in fairness, like, we wouldn't have any extra from the States. But this year we have extra people from Australia, actually. There was a lot of Australians the first day, which I thought, and they weren't together in groups, no, they were together just as maybe individuals or in pairs. But certainly, I was looking at the roll the first day, and we had 24 from all parts of Australia. That was on Saturday last. There's probably a lot more sense. But a lot from European countries, Italy, particularly northern Italy. It's amazing some years that you get particular countries, get a lot of that, Germans, of course, as well. But there would be all over worldwide, really.
What about innovations within the school itself this year?
Well, apart from, say, the fit, the only extra dimension would be we decided on, last year we started, we had a couple of elementary Irish classes. And there was people asked us, we had some lectures in Scotch Gaelic, we ran a couple of classes in Scotch Gaelic in for beginners, and that we did actually, we just got, there's two native speakers from involved in teaching it. And we're pleasantly surprised, like the attendance, because we kept a very low profile regard, we didn't want the thing to be crowded out. But the attendance and the people who were teaching were very happy with it, so that was, you know, we were also happy with that.
The tribute to Paddy Kenny the other evening was a particularly nice afternoon, I think.
It was, yeah. I think, you know, it just shows, like, the respect for Paddy Kenny. And again, I must pay a tribute to everyone who was involved in it and all the work that went into it. Like, Mara O'Keefe and all her helpers had excellent work done, really, you know, and it went off very, very well. And I think one of them tributes, I think, is very, very important. It showed it because we started, we remember one to Bobby Casey, I can remember one by Seamus MacMahon, one to Johnny O'Leary by Peter Brown, one by Mick O'Connor last year to Joe Ryan, and then this year to, and it, I think it's a worthy thing to do, because these people in many cases were great ambassadors and great bearers of our culture, and they were mostly very shy people who didn't certainly want limelight. And it's nice at their age, and you know, because it's easy to talk about a person say when they're dead, but I think that is important. And what's more, in the case of most of these musicians, it's so good to see many of the great rising, great stars of music coming in, and so honoured to take part in the programme.
What about the future, Marisha? Is there anything that you need, or you see needs to be tweaked or changed for 2004?
The future is very far away, but hopefully, you know, there would be bits of cheer, but really, if we could, if there was only one third of the summer school there in 2004, like, we would count. We don't count. Numerically, it's no success to us, really. It's the quality that counts. So we're not really in the numbers game in that sense. But, you know, it's the people coming, and the people who make the great effort, and with the goodwill that we owe these people. And only for them, to be honest. And that they come, you know, many, I'm not going to mention names because it would be totally wrong. But they have make a great effort to come here, and they've been associated with the school from the start. That's something that, you know, we keep going. And, hopefully, like, that we will be running the summer school in the future, that we're already delighted, and that we'll keep going. But it just proves one thing, that you'd ask a question, why does the thing stay? It stayed because we put a lot of effort into it. We go out of our way to get the very best of people, you know, and we're fortunately, again, in the sense that we're not concerned about politics of music. Like, we respect everyone. We're not, like, whatever associations they're with, they're perfectly entitled to that, and if they're with, and they're all very welcome. And I think that's freedom, and that sense of freedom is a big thing to us. And I think it's a big thing to a lot of people coming. You know, they feel that they're not sort of perpetuating any particular individual cause or organisation. They know they're coming here because it's music. There is no hidden agendas. And they respect that and the integrity of what's happening.
Marisha, go meet Mahagat Agus Gunnairi Gagalu.
Ramil Mahagat Agus Gunnairi Gagalu. Thank you.
reels, Johnny from Gansey, the Fifer's Reel, and the 9 points of Knavery, taken from a new CD entitled Rejoice, the music from the Joyce collection, which was launched at Skullstar Willie Clancy last Sunday, featuring Donal O'Connor, Maura O'Keefe, John Faulkner, and Jackie Daly. Well, earlier this week here in Milltown, I met up with Donal O'Connor and Jackie Daly, and I asked Donal, first of all, to tell me a little bit about Patrick Weston Joyce himself.
Patrick Weston Joyce was a historian. He was a scholar and a collector of music and songs. He lived in Blenisheen, was born in Ballyorgan, a small village in southeast Limerick. Was born in 1827. Got his early education in the hedge schools. And apparently there were a lot of hedge schools all around Kilmallock and Fanningstown and Kilfinnan. And he gives a great description of meeting the various schoolmasters who specialised in different subjects, some in mathematics, some in English grammar, and some in history. And he seemed to have a keen interest in history, and he wrote Child's History of Ireland, and he wrote Social Histories of Ireland, and books on place names. He's a scholar, and in particular, he had a great interest in preserving the local heritage and the local tradition.
And I presume that's where his interest in the music came from then?
Well, he was also a musician. He played the fife, as he says himself. And he even has a humorous description of being in class and playing for the class, playing his fife, and they all enjoyed it great. So being a musician, he had that extra insight into the music and that extra interest. But above all, he wanted to preserve the tunes from the old musicians who lived around there. And that was wonderful, because we have his two collections of particular the one we work from, his biggest collection, which is almost 1,000 tunes.
Would many of those tunes be in general circulation now?
Well, some of them would be, but the ones we picked out had died out of the tradition, and it's great to reintroduce them and to bring them alive again.
I know it's a project that you've been working on and interested in for a number of years now. So tell us a little bit about how you actually went about doing it.
Well, I'll tell you, County Limerick VEC set up a subcommittee to honour the two Joyce brothers. There were two of them in particular who were great scholars, P.W. and Robert. And they set up Skull and Shoigak. And its first one was held in 1984. And the aim was to honour the work done by the two brothers, in particular P.W., who wrote in all 30 books. So for Jackie came to play in Maura at the sessions, we had concerts and that. And Monikeen Shoige, who's a local historian, has written extensively on the Joyce brothers. And he has a good collection of the works of P.W., and they were always on display. So, you know, we got the idea, looking through the collection, why not make a recording? So the project started, and it took about 3 years to research. And Maura O'Keefe did marvellous work in researching, actually taking 1,000 tunes, playing them, and Jackie and herself listening to them. And I used to go up weekends, because I was teaching then, and listen to the work of the week, maybe. Mm-hmm. And pick out the tunes that we thought were the oldest and the ones least heard of, and the ones that had died out, actually, from the tradition.
Would there be tunes now that, say, when Maura started playing them, and Jackie and then yourself, that would jump out at you as being particularly attractive tunes?
Yeah, there were. They were different, and the settings. In some cases, we took tunes that are well-known, but with a different setting also. But some of the older tunes haven't been heard since 1850. And Joyce even has notes there about, you know, that he learned this from Ned Goggin, who was a local fiddle player in 1850. He heard him playing it. And it's marvellous that we can bring those tunes alive again today in this recording.
Would you hope now that people, let's say, maybe young people who might listen to this CD, would go on and take a further interest start looking at the other tunes in the book?
Oh, certainly. That's what we would hope, and that the young musicians would take an interest in the collection and play these tunes again, and they will become current in the tradition now. They will be reintroduced into the tradition.
Okay, Jackie Daly is here with me as well, and Jackie was one of the musicians involved in this. Jackie, if I can ask you first of all, what was it about these tunes that you would find particularly attractive?
Well, I first came in contact with them when I was down at the festival. They had an original copy of the collection in a glass case, and I asked them, could I have a look at it, please? And they said, okay. I took it out and I opened the first page, and written in pen was, donated by Kenturk Convent. And I'm from Kenturk, so I thought, bloody hell, I'll have a look at this. And I got Donald to make a copy of it for me, which is great, and started going through it. And as well as Joyce being a good musician, obviously, he was a composer as well. And some of the tunes that he wrote down are actually compositions of his own. So.
And are they tunes, are they particularly attractive tunes to play now for somebody like you who comes from not that far away, I suppose, from the area where he did the collecting?
Yeah, he did a lot of collecting there, but he also moved around the country. But, yeah, they're very interesting. And one of the things I find attractive is that the hornpipes are really, really beautiful. And hornpipes weren't long in Ireland at the time. Hornpipes only came, people reckon, around the 1830s. So it's surprising that he had got such great, beautiful, melodic hornpipes when they weren't in the country too long.
Okay, Donal, just to come back to you for a final word about this, and I mentioned earlier that you would obviously hope that this would bring the music and the collection of Joyce to a lot more people in that. Have you any other projects in the pipeline in relation to Joyce in the future?
Well, I'll tell you, we would like to make, there's a descendant of the P.W. in Boston, and he did visit the Joyce School. I'd like very much to give him this CD and to hear his reaction, and possibly go over there and play some of the tunes for him. He's a professor in some university over in Boston, and I hope that I'm sure he'd be very excited when he gets this recording.
And is the book itself, the collection, readily available still?
Unfortunately, the collection is not available. It is only found in libraries at the moment. It was published first in New York in 1909, and it was republished in 1965. And unfortunately, it is out of print, and it's not available currently.
And would you hope that this might give a bit of impetus to somebody maybe to republish it?
Very much. We've been talking about that it would be a wonderful idea if somebody published, you know, republished the whole collection and made it available to the public in a wide area, you know, but it's his hope that someone will publish it. Thank you.
Hornpipes, Richards and Corlicks, and that's taken from the album Rejoice, Tunes and Songs from the Joyce Collection. And for our last selection of music on tonight's programme, we'll return to the Bellbridge Hotel in Spanish Point, and a great selection of reels here from a group of musicians gathered together late in the evening.